Hello and welcome to the Veeam Community Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Vanover. This is episode 34, Change the App. Here we go. Today, my guest is Derek Schaaland. Hey, how you doing, Derek?
I'm great, Rick. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing good. This is the week right before VMworld for me. We're recording here on Thursday, August 25th, and man, I am full tilt at Veeam speed. This is going to be a mad race to the finish for me. Today, we saw vSphere 5 go GA, so a lot of stuff going on. I'm busy. I take it you're busy as well, right?
Very busy. Speaking of Veeam speed, I'm getting ready to spin that up and kind of play around a little bit.
Oh, luck out. Sweet. Thank you for that. Business, and I hope you enjoy it. So, Derek, you and I go way back. We have blogged together on a couple sites, Twitter stuff, Facebook, Smice, whatever, internet, all that good stuff. Could you take a moment and give a quick introduction of yourself to the listeners?
Sure. My name is Derek Schaaland, just like Rick said. I blog at my own website, DerekSchaaland.com. I also blog for TechRepublic.com. And when I'm not, during my day job, pays the bills, I'm an administrator for a small manufacturing company in Wisconsin.
Got it. And we were lucky enough to catch up with you at Tech Field Day 7 in Austin, and also got to snag Scott Lowe on the podcast. Did you have fun at the event?
The event was amazing. Stephen Foskett and everybody did a great job, and it's always fun to meet people and just see what the vendors are doing, because I might not get to interact with directly, so it's always a good experience.
Yeah, definitely. I attended the very first Tech Field Day, and it was definitely an eye-opening experience for me. I know that, you know, I follow that kind of stuff a lot more closely now, but it's one of those things that it was a lot of fun. And then the other half, the type of events that are specific to a single vendor are also very nice. So that's cool. Glad you enjoyed it, and of course it was nice to catch up. So,
hey, which better, the delegate side or the presenter side?
Ooh, tough question. Well, to be fair, I did not have the full burden of presentation. You know, my boss, Doug Hazelman, pretty much drove the presentation. I was there for, you know, a little bit of help and, you know, did one part of the demo. But, you know, it's definitely a lot less pressure as a delegate, I'll tell you that. And, you know, of course, Doug, you know, took more of the pressure. So I guess it's really, do you like the thrill of being on the spot? You know, if you do, then it's all right. So I'm a competitive person, you know, underneath it all. I try to be pretty nice, but I am really deeply competitive. So I always step up to a challenge. And so I guess I'll say I like it on this side a little bit more. The only catch is, of course, I don't get to do it as much or at all, really, now. But, yeah, that's an interesting question. I guess they both have their perks, but I guess I'll give a slight nudge to the presenter side. Now I got to think about that. Anyways, what we wanted to talk about here today, Derek, was changing the application, okay? And let me set some context for that. You know, we are all going through some pretty significant changes in our infrastructure. You know, I guarantee that me, you, listener A, listener B, the infrastructure of their data center, small, medium, large, anywhere in between, is fundamentally different than it was, say, 5-6 years ago. I'd say that's a fair statement. Would you agree?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Some of the things that we're doing, we might not be all the way there yet, but we're looking to virtualize probably 85% of our infrastructure.
Sweet.
Including desktops coming up soon, so it could be real interesting.
Awesome. Yeah, and, you know, that's an option today, right? You know, there were boutique solutions before to virtualize desktops, and server virtualization was a wait-and-see, you know, you go way back. But, you know, it's pretty much accepted now that these are options. These are
maybe not everybody runs VMware on their laptop.
Right. No, yeah, I have a mobile VDI lab here. Right, of course. But, you know, there's fundamental differences, and these are all accepted platforms today, right? There's no, you don't have to go to the CIO and advocate that this whole virtualization thing is a good idea. So, you know, that battle's already been made. Those, you know, cost justifications are already out there, and the disaster recovery, business continuity aspects are very well defined for what we can do in virtualization. So then the question is that ammo enough to change the application? And what I mean by that is, you know, we all have these brick applications, these problems in the data center that too big, too clunky, too old. You know, it's an old version of this or that. Do we now have ammo to change that with all of these new technologies such as virtualization? And I'm just curious what your thoughts are to that.
I think we do, but it depends on the application and in some cases what the changes are. Because of things like desktop virtualization or application virtualization, maybe we can make that older legacy application run better and just change the user experience. So it's delivered to their super fancy brand new desktop as a virtualized environment where it runs just as old and as forever as it always did.
Yeah.
I think it can go both ways.
Yeah, you're right. It, of course, that's the token answer. It does depend and it can go either way. I get stuck on these large SQL servers, large Exchange servers. Okay, that's one of the areas I just get stuck on the most. That A, that's what I've worked with the most before I, you know, came here. But B, I really start to think, should we manage a smaller number of larger servers or a larger number of smaller servers when it comes to these distributed, not necessarily distributed apps, but apps that either can be distributed, such as Exchange, or in the case of SQL Server, you know, not quite one database for every application, a database server, but, you know, having a more manageable virtual machine. Of course, we can have the monster VM, but under no circumstances is anybody going to really, really want a terabyte of virtual memory assigned to a virtual machine. Nobody's going to really want that, okay? So, you know, what if we split that up into, you know, 10 virtual machines that are, you know, 100 gig or 128 gig or something, you know, a little bit smaller. That's even still really big in my book. But, you know, have you ever had those types of thoughts with the, specifically with SQL or Exchange, with the new infrastructure options that are available today?
I have, but I'm not really sure how I'm going to sort of tackle it. I'm excited to think about Exchange 2010 because currently we run Exchange 2003, so we're a version or so behind. And moving these things to a virtualized space or VMs, I can't decide if it's easier to manage, say, half my mailboxes on one server and half my mailboxes on another server so that, you know, maybe we can do maintenance at noon instead of at 3 in the morning when nobody's using mail.
Well, you can move them between different database servers, if I remember right. I want to call them mailbox stores, but that's not the right term. I think you can. Because you have the front end, right, of the CAS, right, and he brokers the connectivity. So if you can put multiple CAS hubs in there, I'm going way back on my Exchange architecture because that is not what I'm an expert in. But, you know, if you can design Exchange to have multiple database servers, multiple, access through the CAS hubs, you know, the CAS roles. And that's on 2007 talk. 2010, you know, I'm probably going to get torn up in the Twitter sphere, but 2010 does have a lot of options, and you have to be able to move the mailboxes, right? So if you do need to do maintenance, pick them up and move them. That's within the OS, right? But then if you have to maintain something on the virtual machine host, that's already a pretty easy thing to do.
But do you cluster your virtual machines for Exchange then so that if you just happen to, you know, maybe you don't move them, maybe they slide over automatically, or you're doing a mirror image of, say, 50 mailboxes across a node cluster so that cluster A goes down for maintenance. 25 minutes later, it's back online. Then cluster B goes down for maintenance.
Well,
there's a lot of options there.
Yeah, like MSCS cluster. Is that what you're referring to?
Yes.
Yeah, see, I would go the HA cluster myself. But the big, you know, problem with HA in the VMware talk is that it's not application aware to fail over a mailbox group or something like that. Okay, so do you do both? I don't know. I'm actually a proponent of simplicity. So, you know, what's going to be the easiest thing for you to manage and support? Okay, so those are factors, and vMotion's a big thing. You know, if you have a problem with the host, you know, you might presumably see it coming, predictive failures and stuff like that. You can vMotion it over. If you have a host down situation, the HA capability can bring it up elsewhere. If you can't accept that, there's the FT capability, which, you know, in VMware Talk will run it simultaneously on two different hosts. So, in a sense, you've got options at the infrastructure from clustering and then options in the application from clustering. Depends on, you know, that's a tough question. I don't know. Some people might say do both, honestly.
That could be a lot of management overhead to get set up. I think it'd be okay once you got it running, because really you don't worry, you set it and forget it in a lot of ways. But to get there could be a lot more work than it's worth.
I'm also wondering, though. Yeah, but what about, like, you know, you have to go through your requirements analysis, right? You know, what are the availability requirements? And I don't know, but I'm sure you're there, that there was definitely a point at some point in time that email became a tier one application.
It's almost unfortunate.
Yeah, there was a time when it was, you know, not a priority in the data center, even though we all had it. But now, of course, it is. So I think that, you know, you have to take that into consideration of, you know, are you driving, you know, for one example, it might be a part of the revenue stream. Okay, in that sense, email is pretty flippin' important, I take it. So, you know, we go through the requirements and then really determine, well, we can, you know, recover from a virtual machine issue in this much time, you know, to recovery. If we define those recovery points, you know, align those to the configurations available, I would choose the simplest option that would meet all the requirements, but that's just me. So, I don't know. There's a lot of options both ways, the application and the infrastructure, to deliver, you know, a critical service like email. Databases, I think, are a little bit simpler because, at least with SQL that's out right now today, you know, we don't have that database server type of move capability. Within the app, you know, you can, of course, back up the database, move it elsewhere, and stuff like that, change the server name.
I have to think that's got to be coming. If they're doing it, look at all the other places they're doing it. It's got to be coming to databases and things like SQL Server soon.
Oh, I know it is, but I just don't remember the name, and it's not publicly available yet. But I remember on another podcast we had a guy talking about it. Brent Ozar, SQL Server MVP, just had my head spinning about SQL and some of the things that are coming for that. And that was a year ago. That was a good episode.
Hey, for me, it doesn't take much to get my head spinning about SQL.
I actually understand SQL a heck of a lot better than I do Exchange, simply because of my background. But, you know, it's just one of those things that those are the apps, you know, I keep kind of bumping my toe on in the data center. So I don't know about you, but it's just like love hate. You know, I understand SQL and I pretty much understand Exchange, but I hate some of the things that happen. You know, the ginormous database servers, they're just a pain. I guess, you know, you got to also think about the converse of that. You could have a ginormous database server. That's in a way better than a ginormous unstructured data file server, you know, or the same size. I'd rather it be a SQL Server database than, you know, 500,000 4K files or 100 million 4K files or something like that. One big database server is going to be a lot easier to manage, even though it's bigger. So there's a million factors that go into it.
Absolutely.
What about, you know, depends on the app. That was your first comment. I'll go back to that. That's so correct, because some apps, I don't know. Do you run into the not supported on virtualization issue anymore? It's been a while for me. I'm just curious if you have.
I haven't seen it too much. I mean, it's supported at feature release whatever, mm-hmm. and it's the one ahead of what we're running. Or if you kick the tires a little and sort of it's square peg round hole kind of situation, you can make it work if. And you don't tell anybody.
Sure, right. But yeah, but I don't know. Then you're in like maybe an unsupported situation, and that may not always be a good idea. But you know, there's plenty of people are doing things that quote unquote work, even though they're not, you know, the official way or the supported way. But honestly, you know, if they're capable of supporting the app as is, then go with it. That's awesome. How about, you know, in your journey to virtualization, you said you've got some pretty ambitious goals. What's been your biggest challenge thus far in, you know, going that virtualization route? Has it been making the case for the upfront investment for shared storage or, you know, training? Or what kind of issues have you had going from A to B thus far?
I think the thing I thought was going to be the biggest hurdle would be, you know, getting the investment and the buy-in from management and the ownership group, but that was surprisingly easy. We had some infrastructure problems, and we're running out of disk space on our filer, and all of a sudden we're discussing storage, and the next thing you know, there's boxes coming through the door. Mm. Now it's just getting the house in order and figuring out which order to do the stuff in. Like, I'm replacing pretty much everything. We're doing, like, new UPSs, so you got to start there. Then we're going to do virtualization hosts and storage trays and all kinds of stuff, and eventually get to things like applications and desktops. So it's kind of all coming together at once.
Yeah.
It's been an interesting ride.
That's awesome. So it's almost like a full reinvention of your infrastructure, right?
Pretty much. And it's kind of a little overwhelming.
Well, hey, man, I already told you. You gotta pass for me for advice. I can always help you out. So no problems there.
Thanks, man.
What about, you know, kind of nuts and boltsy here. Are you going to P to V, or are you going to do a new build for your systems?
I think I'm going to try some of them as P to V to see how it plays out.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's just some things, whether they're new things we're doing or we weren't going to do them, and, hey, let's move this over here. I might P to V some of that, but some of it I think I'm just going to rebuild. Start fresh. It's always a good idea.
Absolutely. I will throw out that make sure you're, you know, if you're comfortable using the community technology preview version of, or maybe it's the public beta, I should say, the public beta version of VMware Converter. I think the version is 5.3, or maybe it's just 5. Yeah, 5.0. The VMware Converter 5 platform supports a very important aspect of the P to V conversion. It allows a virtual machine to be written as it's converted from a physical machine with blocks aligned to 64K, or maybe it's 16K now, but nonetheless, it's aligned to the disk layout of the source virtual machine. So, simply put, you don't want a block of NTFS data having to traverse multiple VMFS subblocks. Okay, is the simple takeaway there, because it's read and write overhead for that. So if those blocks are aligned, your I/O can be...
It'll be faster.
Yeah, exactly. And this is actually really hard to explain. You know, I'm sitting there moving my hands left and right, and I'm like drawing on an imaginary whiteboard explaining it to you. But it's just one of those options that come...
Where's the camera, man?
Hey, man, this is not a video chat. This is a... I'm not in picture-ready material right now. My office is a mess. My whiteboard is absolutely messy. So long of the short is we better keep it to podcast format. But nonetheless, VMware Converter 5 does have that option. So make sure you're, you know, give that a try, because that'll really help any systems you have for P to V candidacy. The other tip on the rebuild, yeah, like you said, it's always cleaner. Best example of that is, of course, domain controllers. You know, they're not really a good idea to P to V unless you do it cold with the disk. But, yeah, good luck with the project, man. A lot of times the question comes up, is anybody still using P to V? And I'm like, well, yeah, I use it all the time, actually. Not so much for P to V, but sometimes I use it for V to V situations. But, no, good luck with the migration. And also, what about OS? Is this a chance for you to kind of knock out any, like, Windows 2000, 2003 server type of platforms?
In most cases, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
I think we might have a couple of members that stay around, but I don't know that we're going to finally get off of Windows 2003 as far as the domain is concerned.
Well, yeah, when you're talking about the domain, that's a different story. You know, you can almost have a pass for that. Which, my other advice is really to separate infrastructure virtualization, separate that task from domain level migration, because they're fundamentally different. Yet, you know,
absolutely.
If you, from a project management standpoint, that's pure definition of scope creep, you know. So, and am I correct, Derek, that you are a one person shop?
Indeed.
So, since you are the, you know, deliverer of such services, you don't want to make too much work for yourself. So that's just another piece of advice. But you know what? Follow up with it. You know, definitely think about, you know, a newer rev of. The thing is, like for Active Directory domain services, the features are there and they're good, but they're usually not super attractive, right? And it's honestly to upgrade.
It's buried half the time.
Yeah. So and it's like so much work to get there, and it's kind of scary too, right?
Idea of virtualizing the entire domain, which I'm sure that's going to cause some buzz because, you know, you should have at least one physical domain controller, which I will. But if I can get two or more virtual domain controllers that behave just like the physical one and speed up login times for everybody or replication or a whole host of features in Active Directory, why not do it?
Well, that's a good
VMs are
yeah.
cheap.
Yeah, and that's a good example of changing the app, you know. Active Directory Domain Services, change the app to make it match the infrastructure. And I'll tell you what I'm doing in my lab environment, at least. Sounds crazy, but I have a Hyper-V cluster and a VMware cluster, and I've got a domain controller on each. So if I'm doing, you know, low-level VMware maintenance, I still have the domain because it's on the Hyper-V cluster. Likewise, if I'm doing Hyper-V maintenance that for whatever reason takes the domain controller offline and still have one on the VMware environment.
Are the clusters at the host or in the guest?
Host.
Like, do you have a cluster of hosts?
Yeah, I don't do any in-guest clustering. That's because I kind of, historically, VMware-wise, would, you know, lean for HA clusters and stuff like that, but now you got me thinking about that. I don't know. App-level clustering is really good, but I don't really like getting into business of RDMs, you know, in the VMware side.
Technically, though, the cluster would be in the host in Hyper-V anyway, because Hyper-V is in the host.
Well, Hyper-V, yeah, but VMware would be different. I have to think both now, but honestly, life would be a lot easier if you really, really want application clustering. It would be a lot easier in Hyper-V. So,
Plus one for Hyper-V then, right?
Well, take that for what it's worth, but yeah, I mean, I'm probably going to get ridiculed for that also. But, you know, all that being said, domain controllers, Active Directory services, that is a good example of something that you can definitely spread around for more availability based on the infrastructure. As far as one physical, I can appreciate that. I don't know if I agree with it. I'm still kind of the all virtual myself type of guy. So, but you know, I could go back and forth with that. I guess every time it counted for me, I did still have one physical. So, you know, in the non-lab situation, that's what I did. So, I can definitely appreciate that. Even if it's, heck, I hate to say it, just a desktop. You know, because if you're talking about a single, let's just use VMware, a single VMware environment. Simple example, you reboot the whole environment, maybe you've taken out the network or the storage or there was an incident. If you have to reboot the whole virtualization infrastructure, and let's say you're doing things correctly and having a service account for something like vCenter, if the domain's not there, you know, you can't guarantee that the service will start correctly. So, which would then lead to virtual machines starting. You could get them started by logging into the hosts and stuff like that, but it would just complicate.
A lot of work.
Yeah, it would complicate it. So, again, a nod for simple. So, take that. So, anyways, Derek, how about any other application concerns? What do you, you know, anything else going on in your world that you think about with changing the applications today?
Most of the big stuff that we run, and we don't run a lot of big stuff, is going to be virtualization ready going forward. So, I'm kind of jumping up and down about, do we switch applications to a different vendor or something that's a little more suited to us as we go virtual?
Ooh.
Those applications will be virtualized.
Well, that's a whole different thing, is changing products, not necessarily changing up the single application, meaning changing the architecture is one way of going about it to virtualization, but wholesale changes of the product, wow, that's a lot,
right,
a lot tougher of a sell, you know what I mean, internally. Cost-wise may incur some costs, but, you know, if you look at virtualization and, you know, I can protect it to this level on this platform and, you know, to a little bit less, I can protect the physical servers in theory. So it's like, you know, which one do you want, business owner? I can bring you up here or I can leave you here, that type of thing. That's pretty cool. Derek, by chance, are you going to VMworld next week?
I am not going to VMworld next week. I wish. There's a lot of stuff kind of floating around here. So
Understood. Well, this podcast is going to go live Monday of the week of VMworld. So definitely, you know, stay tuned on Twitter for the VMworld tag and as well as the funny VMworld 3-word tag to see what's going on. It's going to be a busy week. vSphere 5 just went available, so it's going to be a wild week, so hopefully I make it. I should be fine. And then, you know, hopefully, you know, your project can get started, and good luck with that.
Thanks, man.
So, Derek, I want to change gears a little bit. I've got a little gimmick for my podcast, and I don't know if you've listened before, but my gimmick is called Three Views from You. I'm going to ask you three questions, each referenced in a different point in time, and these are open-ended questions, and these are just you as a technologist. You know, it could be, you know, based on your work experience, could be based on your blogging experience, even your home technology and compute, whatever experiences. But just something that would be interesting to share. And usually we get some pretty interesting answers. So I'm going to start with the past. So, Derek, as a technologist, what's the most interesting technical role, story, or other type of technical experience that you could share with us?
Well, before I really got into the whole end-to-end business technology role, I was working in tech support at an ISP, because, you know, all great technologists or good technologists start out as tech support somewhere.
Absolutely.
And this was right around the time of September 11th, and after that, a buddy of mine and I decided to start a website to help the troops overseas communicate with their families back home. And it didn't exactly start out to go down that road, but it quickly went there. I mean, we got calls from military officials about how to make it work better and how to get more people on it. And it was really an interesting project. Unfortunately, I moved away before we saw it kind of come to fruition. And some of the guys at one of the Air Force bases allowed my buddy to go on the simulator of the B-2, and it was a pretty cool experience from what I understand.
Oh, I would think so. Wow, that's pretty cool. The B-2 part especially, but no, that's awesome. That's a great story to share. How about in the present? What kind of technology aspects of what you're doing now, be it work, home, or whatever, what are you most passionate about and interested in technology-wise right now?
Wow. There's so many things. There's so much tech and so little time, I guess, would be one way to look at it. I think virtualization and storage are the things I'm most interested in right now. But the task with those is sort of, it's more reviewing and learning about the technology and helping other people learn about the technology and taking some of the things I get from events like Tech Field Day and passing them along to other people in this area that may not get to go to such things.
Absolutely. That's a great way of looking at it.
Evangelism.
Awesome. No, that's cool, because you're right. There's, you know, plenty of people out there that, you know, I haven't gone to a Tech Field Day, might not even have the time or really want to get up and go to something like that. So, yeah, you're doing a good service to the IT community and, you know, saying what you think and saying what you don't like and checking out what's to be checked out. That's good stuff. How about into the future? What do you see into the future technology-wise, long-term, short-term, whatever, that you think you're going to be most interested in?
I think disaster recovery is something that's going to be a hot topic, mainly because it's come up around here a few times, and there's some new technology coming out and things being possible now with things like disk to disk to disk to disk to tape. I don't know, pick the number of disks you want to stop at, but I don't think tape is going away, but I want to switch from an everyday tape shop to something that's a little more not necessarily reliable, but easier to use and quicker to get at,
mm-hmm.
and keep the tapes for an archive so I can get the data off that I need and send it somewhere. And it's available if we need it for things like eDiscovery. So that's kind of a something I'm hoping to play with soon.
Oh, eDiscovery. Don't even get me started. That could be... That's a whole category of complicated stuff. So, well, good luck. Hopefully you don't have to work with that.
It's very good that I don't have to worry about things like Sarbanes, man.
Yes. Well, anyways, hey, Derek, I really appreciate you being on the podcast today. Let's wrap up here a little bit. And could you mention your blog URL as well as your Twitter ID?
Sure. My Twitter ID username is WebJunkie. And do you want me to spell it, or are we good?
You can go ahead and spell it. That's fine.
It's WebJunkie.
Got it.
And the URL of my blog is DerekShawlin.com.
Got it. And I'll put both of those in the podcast notes so you can click right from there. Well, hey, Derek, thanks so much for being on the show. Hope to see you again at another social media event.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Rick.